Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Jerry Schimmel this morning.
I am doing question mark millennial Ben
with... question mark with Mark Schlereth. And let's go back to Justin Simmons. Let's hit on that again. I know we've done that a lot the last couple of days. In your mind, here's the question. What's the percentage? What's the odds of this thing getting done before 2 o'clock Mountain Time today? Is it completely dead, or will we have a chance to be surprised today?
I'm going to go, I think we have a chance, a very slim chance, but I think we have a chance of seeing something get done. And I'd probably put that right now at, let's call it 20%.
That's
between
optimistic.
10 and 20%.
Okay. Yeah.
I think there's always a chance, right? There's always a chance to say, hey, we're pretty close on that. We know what the numbers are, right? We can look at the top five safeties in the league and say, hey, these are kind of where the numbers are. Can we come into a situation where we're, you know, doing $13 million a year, you know, on a 4-year deal? And can we get the, you know, can we get the proper amount of upfront money, signing bonus money, and guarantees? I think the parameters are there, based on the Kevin Byard deal, based on the Earl Thomas deal in Baltimore last year, based on the Tyrann Mathieu deal to Kansas City. Like, you could figure it out, right? I mean, it's probably. You probably could figure that out. It's just a matter of, you know, to me, do the Broncos want to come up to that standard? And, you know, again, I just look at it from, I look at everything and forgive me if this is not the way it goes, but I just kind of look at everything from a player's perspective. And if you came up to the numbers of the top guys and you were right there with them, I think as a player, you're like, hey, I like it here. I'm a part of the community. I love being here. This is generational changing money. This not only affects my kids, but my grandkids. Like, we're good. I'm good with this. And if you can't come up to that level, you know, you're good for playing 11, you know, at $11 million, $11.5 million, whatever it is for a 1-year deal. And then having the option to either get franchise tagged again or to go find your deal elsewhere.
Well, what's Justin Simmons making now? I could look it up, but you know.
I don't know, but he was a third round pick. He's, you know, he's probably making a couple million bucks a year.
Yeah.
You know?
So I've heard people say, well, you know, 11.4 million for 1 year. That's not so bad.
No, it's not. But that's what, you know, that's what he's saying too. He's like, man, this is I can play on this. I'm not going to be disappointed. This is big time. This is big money. Yeah. This 1 year will be more than he's made in his first 4 years. I'm sure.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at that like, man, I can live with that. We're good.
Yeah.
And then it gives me another option to either get franchised again, or what if somebody else steps up that they feel like they really need? Like, you know, at what point? Well, Courtland Sutton is going through his third year. He was a second round pick. So this is his third. This is his third season. So he'll be in the last year of his contract. So they won't need to franchise him. I don't know if there's another player on the roster that would look like, hey, a franchisable guy.
Yep.
So anyhow, I mean, I don't know. I look at that and say, you know, you play it out. If they franchise you again, the money goes up, you know, probably a couple million bucks anyhow.
Right.
So, 2 year, you know, at the end of the day, a 2 year, you know, what would it be? A 2 year, $25 million deal. Yeah, it's not too bad.
No, that'd be all right.
Yeah. So now obviously you put the risk of having to play and the potential of injury and all those things on you. But, that's the dice that guys are willing to roll.
You asked Troy Rank about, hey, how come the Chiefs get all this stuff done? They're signing Mahomes and they're key players and all that. And his response was interesting. And my question of you is, are you buying all that? He said, hey, they have extra revenue because they're Super Bowl champs. And more importantly, they are rolling the dice that COVID is not going to bring that salary cap down all that much. So they're going to move forward. You buying that?
Yeah.
You buying those two things?
You know what? Interestingly enough, just listening to some people that are more versed than I when it comes to salary
cap. Nobody is. Nobody is that. Nobody's more versed than you.
Yes, more versed than I when it comes to salary cap understanding.
Okay.
So
that's not me, by the way.
Right. They've got this. They've got this collective bargaining agreement, a 10-year collective bargaining agreement. So, not that the cap is going to go down significantly. They may flatten the cap for next year and borrow from the future. So they have the ability to essentially say, hey, we're going to borrow against future revenue from the next three caps to level out next year's cap. And so instead of it dipping 25, 30%, we'll just keep it flat. And then instead of it going up 10% a year or 20% a year, we'll manage that so that the year after, so 2022, we'll only allow it, it'll go up 5% because we'll borrow, you know, 5% from that year, 5% from 2023 and 5% from 2024 to keep it flat next year. And then if, instead of it going up 12%, it's only going to go up 7% a year. And so they have the ability to manipulate that against future earnings.
Okay.
So, you know, they'll figure that out. And that's, I think that's one thing the Kansas City Chiefs are, you know, are banking on. I think the other thing is, you know, Patrick Mahomes' deal was a 10-year extension. So in the next 3 years, Jerry, my understanding of the contract, in the next 3 years, he'll actually make $63 million in the next three seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at that, that's a little over $20 million a year for the next 3 years. That is... That's pennies.
Cap friendly.
Yes,
obviously,
that is pennies.
Yeah.
And then let's face it, 4 years from now, when you got to pay the Piper $50 million, guess what you'll do?
Renegotiate.
You'll renegotiate it. And so, like, I think they have put themselves in a position to, let's say 4 years from now, his cap hit is going to be $50 million. Well, then you go back and say, okay, listen, what we've been paying you, we've had you at, you know, 18% of our cap value for the last 3 years or whatever it is, right? 20%. You know what we're going to do? We're going to renegotiate this. We're going to spread it out over another 7 years or 8 years or 10 years or whatever we spread it out over, right? And we're going to keep you right at about 20, 25%, which will allow us to manage the rest of our roster. And we're going to give you a bunch. That upfront money you didn't get in that first contract, you only got $10 million upfront. We're going to give you all that upfront money. So here's your $150 million. Boom. There's a check for you. And we'll spread it out over, you know, 10 years. And, you know, and we'll do another 10-year contract. And, like, that's what they do. That's how they manage that. And the next thing you know, you're making, you know, you're just making a ton. You're making all that $500 million. But instead of your cap hit being $50 million a year, they've gotten it down to, you know, $27 million or $30 million a year. And, you know, you're essentially making less than Russell Wilson and you know, and all these other cap value guys that, you know, you are a better quarterback than.
Yeah. You got to get creative.
Yeah, I mean.
Right?
You
get creative.
But this gives them an opportunity to keep their team intact and chase, you know, and chase back-to-back championships and chase, you know, a three-peat, which has never been done in the Super Bowl era.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think the Packers in the 60s before the Super Bowls happened won three championships in a row, I believe. But it's never been done during the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl started in, what, 66?
Mm-hmm.
And it's never been done. Nobody's ever three-peated since that time. So it doesn't happen very often. Doesn't happen in – it's happened in other sports. The Lakers did it in the early 2000s, right? They won three in a row. There's got to be – I think the Yankees are the last three-peat team in baseball. It's like the, gosh, who was it? Maybe the Islanders maybe did it back in the 80s or maybe it's happened in other sports, but it's just never happened during the Super Bowl era.
Yeah.
In football.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of hockey, it's Legends Week here on The Fan, powered by Siltahar Motors. And right now we welcome in a former Avalanche defenseman, Adam Foote. Adam, welcome. Hey, thanks for taking some time with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, we had Clint Hurdle on Monday, and the first question we asked Clint was, in your time in Denver, what sticks out with you the most? And he said it was a World Series that we went to in 2007. For you, when you look back at your time and two different stints with the Avalanche here, Adam, what sticks out the most? What's the top of your memory list there?
Well, I mean, winning, I would have to agree with them. I mean, them going to the World Series and almost getting it done, that's awesome. But for us just to be able to win in both championships, I mean, the first one winning, we were young, and I don't think we realized until, I mean, I know I, maybe I'll just speak for myself, I didn't realize how good we were until probably round two of the playoffs, and just to win the first championship in the state. And then I don't know if the Ray Bourque deal, Joe handing the cup over to him, topped it. I think it probably did with a lot of fans. But when you can win in a city, you just feel like you're part of it for forever. It's a great feeling.
Difference between winning a Stanley Cup and winning a gold medal for Team Canada, which you did in 2002. Which juxtapose those two feelings. Which one stands out more for you, or if any of them do?
Yeah, it's a great question because, you know, when we went to the Olympics, we didn't win it the first time in Nagano. We lost to the shootout there, the Hasek. But when we ended up winning it, I didn't realize how big it was until the following seasons. You travel in Canada and play in the NHL cities, and fans come up to you, Vancouver Canucks fans, you know, Montreal Canadiens fans. They approach you and they say thank you for winning the medal, and until then I didn't realize how huge it was, but it was different. It's a different tournament. It's a mental grind for sure, because you don't want to mess up, you know, representing your country and you know, being that player that made that crucial mistake. And I know you can't go in thinking that way, but the NHL, the Stanley Cup playoffs is such a grind. It's seven game series, and it was definitely harder physically, and I still think the cup, it's hard to say, but the cup, something about raising that Stanley Cup, it's a special thing.
Hey, Adam, curious, you began your career with Quebec, and when you, a personal curiosity, when you got the word that franchise is moving to Denver, Colorado, what'd you think? Do you remember your thoughts when you first heard, you know, I gotta uproot here, we're going to the States?
I can't believe you guys asked that question. If you give me a minute, I'll tell one great story. CCM at the time sent me a box of T-shirts over and hats to my apartment in Quebec. And, you know, I was a young player. It was nice to get freebies and things like that. And we heard rumblings. You know, the season was over in Quebec. We heard rumblings that we were going to get sold, but I was young and I wasn't really paying too much attention to it. The season was over. We were out the night before. I'm late to get to the rink for our final meeting. I grab a T-shirt out. I put this purple T-shirt on. I run to the rink. And after the media is all over me, they come over and they're talking to me. They're like, I guess you're ready to go to Colorado. And I go, what are you talking about? And I look down. I'm wearing a Rockies T-shirt. And the Colorado Rockies here, I'm like, I had no idea I had it on, and I wasn't quite sure that the deal was almost going through. So it was across Canada and the Globe and Mail that I was with, almost like I was smearing them, and it was so innocent. But how about that for grabbing the purple T-shirt?
That's awesome.
That is amazing. You know, I don't know if you got to watch, Adam, on ESPN, the whole documentary about Michael Jordan and what a grinder he was, and how he, you know, how he basically just kind of ruled a little bit with an iron fist over the Bulls during those championship years. And I had the good fortune of having Patrick Wall, when he was the coach here, come into studio, you know, once a week. And the intensity of Patrick Wall in studio was something special. And I just kind of, as I was watching that documentary, I kept thinking to myself, I wonder if Patrick Wall was that guy for the Avalanche during those Stanley Cup runs. If he was the guy that kind of cracked the whip in the locker room, what was it like playing with him and the legend that kind of he was between the pipes?
Well, I remember Patrick saying something to me my first year rooming with him. I roomed with him for 8 seasons, and you know, he said, you know, in order to win, the hard things have to be done, hard things have to be said. And he said, we're paid to be pros and friends second, and I'll never forget that. And it's the hardest thing to do, and I think in the era now, even playing now in your sport, football, or my sport, hockey, I think it's getting harder to be that way, to tell the truth, to you know, hold people accountable. But if you're going to win, your best players have to be your best players, and they're going to have to lead by example. But I think every dressing room I've been in, when we've had good teams, even the Olympics, some things have had to be said, and some the big players step up and calm things. And Wall was definitely one of those guys.
I got to ask you, too, about the fans in Denver when you're playing here, Adam. I know that when you guys came from Quebec and started playing, it was a very good team, a really good young team. And so it helped to have the fans embrace you. But just talk about, I went to many hockey games when you were playing. That place was pretty crazy in the heyday. Talk about the Denver fans and what they meant to you when you were playing.
Well, it was great. I mean, we had our tough times, and I didn't. Joe was there before me in Quebec, so he saw even tougher times when he first came in. But he had great seasons, but in Quebec. But when we came over, we were starting to get better. We had a good core in place, and the fans. We were winning. We were winning hockey games, and we were just young, and the fans took us in, and they loved the game. The McNichols was packed all the time, and it was still in. You know, we were hitting the end of the era of, you know, there was a lot more fighting back then as well with the players that we had. And it was exciting times. And then we moved to the Pepsi Center, and it was a lot of hype, and it was a packed house. And I think it ran for, I mean, we were good for almost a decade, I would say, before that lockout. And it was a great run. And I think the fans and the player, the group at that time will always have a special bond, I think.
Yeah, you know, it was really cool. I grew up in Alaska, so I watched a lot of hockey when I grew up. I never played. But for me, it was cool because I was still playing with the Broncos. And your guys' 96 run to Stanley Cup Finals and the Stanley Cup Championship, I was coaching my son's Little League team, and we used to have parties. Like, we'd have practice, or we'd have a game, we'd all run over to somebody's house to watch the Avalanche play. You know, and it was an amazing time. I would ask you this. You know, obviously you guys had great seasons here and two Stanley Cups, but what was it like for you to have your jersey, that number 52, retired by the Avalanche?
Oh, you know what? That was special, man. If you look at the guys that are up there, you know, Joey, who, you know, when you say the Avs, you think of Sakic, and then there's Forsberg and Waugh and Borky. I mean, I think Hedgie's up there now, but just great players to be part of. But looking back at it now, and, you know, I learned a lot when I left Columbus for 2 years. I don't know what would have happened if I wasn't on a team that was, like, we had a hell of a core, and you can't win without great goaltending and a strong core like we had, and you kind of take advantage of it. So I'm just fortunate, I think, to be you know, a part of a great group we were able to stay together for so long. So, but to see it up there, you know, it's something special, and it means a lot to me.
When you look at those Avalanche teams, Adam, you look at yourself, you look at, like you said, Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh and others. Were there other teammates that maybe a lot of people in Denver don't talk a lot about, but in your mind were really, really key in your Stanley Cup wins?
Well, I mean, you look at Drury in the first one, it just pops out for me. Lemieux and Kaminsky, like, even Scotty Young, you've got to be able to score goals, and Scotty Young had the right winger that had that shot that could, he just beat goaltenders, you know, like Sakic's shot. You need those types of players to win. And, you know, the Mike Ricci, you got to give Ricci a little love there. He was fun to be around, though he moved from us. But and then a guy that I loved playing with that when he was on the ice was Stefan Yell. I mean, when he was on the ice, it was only him and Sakic, and And the defensive zone, when they were on the ice, I felt more comfortable. And those guys like that don't get enough, but everyone plays a role, and you need every position filled properly. And Yeller was one of those guys that could take the third line minutes and kill penalties and play against top line. So there's lots of them, though. Lots of great players.
Did Drury ever sit you guys down and talk about winning the Little League World Series and how he could you guys could use that as a motivating factor to win a Stanley Cup?
You know what? The night before playoffs started, we're out at a team dinner, and like ESPN threw it out. And yeah. I don't think half the team even knew that Drury won it, the Little League World Series.
Right.
And I'll never forget looking over at his table, and his face was beat red because we were like, Chris Drury and the Avalanche take on so-and-so in the first round. I'll never forget that. And he was a great competitor. He was so intense, and I loved it. I mean, he competes, and he's going to do well in New York at his position in management.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I miss about those days as just a player is just the seething hatred that you actually had for other teams. It seems like, you know, everybody trades jerseys, and after the game, everybody's all chummy. And, you know, the greatest thing ever is watching you guys and the Red Wings play, because you guys, like, there was really some seething hate between the two teams. Take me through some of those, just how you felt about them when you guys played them, and what that was like to have a rivalry like that.
Well, I think it's still there. I mean, when I see the lottery come out and see they get the fourth pick, it's still, no, I'm just joking, but the NHL lottery. And I play with Steve Yzerman. He's in charge now with Team Canada. He's a great person, great guy. He competes. He'll get Detroit back where they need to be, just like Sakic. And his group got the Avs back to where they are now. But there is a hate. I mean, there's guys you like that played for Detroit, and you, after your careers are over, you get to meet them and you realize you're just good guys that competed. But at that time, with the fans and the media and what happened on the ice with those, the brawls, it was exciting times. You knew when Detroit was coming into town a week before or 2 weeks before, that it was hype, and you knew when you were playing them, the juices were running and the adrenaline was running. And those were great times and memories, and I think it's one of the best rivalries, not just in hockey, but in sports.
Ah, Footer, man, it's always great to have you on, always great to catch up, man. We really appreciate you. Thank you so much, man, and continued success to you and yours, and stay healthy, my friend.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
All right, Legends Week here on The Fan. Adam Foote, defenseman for the Avalanche, and I think Joe Sakic said something about him. Someone asked Joe Sakic about Adam Foote, and he said, if you could sum up what he meant to a team, and Joe said, just reliable, a reliable guy, night in and night out, always there for you. That kind of describes him right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The way he played.
He's just such a good guy and such a good player. And you know, I mean, when I think of hockey and I think of hockey players, like, he's a guy that I think about.
Yeah.
Right? Just out there every night grinding, just tough, you know, I mean, no nonsense. He's what I think about when I think about hockey. A guy that's willing to sacrifice for the good of the team, regardless of what he has to do. Like, those are the guys. It was one of the things that intrigues me about hockey. I love that aspect of hockey.
Yeah. We'll get back to football and some other things after this. Stay with us.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. People care about three things when buying a vehicle. Number one, price. Siltahar Motors has the best prices and financing options that fit everyone's current credit and financial situation. Get zero down and 0% financing for 72 months. Number two, selection. Siltahar's five dealers in one, offering Ford, Lincoln, Mazda, Volvo, and Maserati, with hundreds of new and used cars, trucks, and SUVs on the lot. And number three, location. Siltahar's right off Highway 36 in Wadsworth, or view their entire selection online at sthmotors.com. Siltahar Motors. Get everything you want out of a dealership.
It is Jerry Schimmel sitting in for Mike Evans, and I misspoke earlier. I said Mike was home this week studying for the GED. That is not the case.
Oh.
Yes, parole officer called and said, no, that's not what he's doing.
Right.
He's doing something else, but he can't tell us what that is.
Okay.
Okay,
right.
So I just want to clear that up. Hey, fun to have Adam Foote on. We go to our RamosLaw.com text line, a couple of comments about that. Well, first of all, it's a great interview. It's about time you had a hockey player on, eh? Hey. I like that one. Yeah. And this one, when I was in third grade, Adam Foote came to my elementary school. He signed my body glove shirt and made my day. I'm now 32, and I still think about how awesome it was him to do that. Awesome guy. And
I just think it's funny. Like, what a story about, you know, like your checkout interview at the end of the season.
And your T-shirt.
And you grab a Rockies T-shirt and cause a, like, completely innocent and cause an absolute ruckus there in Quebec. So
yeah, he said, I can't believe you asked me that question. Oh, man, did I bring something up bad there shouldn't have done?
Yeah.
That was a great story.
That is a great story, right? So, I mean, how awesome is that? I've never heard of that before. So.
I haven't either. Yeah.
But I can totally see, like, are you trying to send a message? You're excited to go to Denver? He's like, what are you talking about? I'm just a young guy. I'm a young player. I don't know any. Not paying attention to any. And you don't, as a young player, you don't pay, like, you really don't pay attention to any of that stuff.
I loved it, too, what he prefaced by saying, I was a young guy. I like free stuff, so I just grabbed his T-shirt.
Who doesn't? I mean, hey, you're an old guy, and you like free. Like, when you get free stuff, you like to get free stuff.
Yeah, you know what? Free T-shirts are the best, aren't they? I got this yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I went, after we did our show, went out and did a thing at a church in Brighton, and they gave me this T-shirt. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Free T-shirts are great.
Free T-shirts. I've got stacks upon stacks of, when you're playing, like, there's always free. There's always T-shirts, you know, whether the NFL sends some, hey, it's kickoff, the 1999 kickoff T-shirt, right? And the club will put T-shirts in there. Like, I went to the Falcons. I was doing a Falcons game, and they gave me a T-shirt, and it was one of their T-shirts from their team meetings. You get these kind of, like, The Last Dance, the documentary of Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
So they'll have Last Dance T-shirts, and they'll have, so whatever the motto is of the week, like, hey, this week we're, knock down the door, right? Or push your chips to the table, and they'll make a T-shirt and it'll be hanging in everybody's locker. And so I've got all these T-shirts back from my Skins days or back from my Denver days. I haven't looked at any of them in years, but, we used to have this every year during training camp. We would have the fishing derby, golf and fishing derby. And it was a fun night, where we canceled practice or whatever. And we went out to a golf course. We had chipping contests, and we had these fishing contests, and we would it was just outside of Greeley. We'd go to these golf courses that had stocked ponds.
Oh, yeah.
And you're just pulling fish out, right? And then Shannon Sharp was always cheating. He always had a
shocking.
Yeah, a stringer of he won it every year. He had a stringer. Somebody catch a bunch of fish and put them on a stringer for him, and then the whistle would blow and he'd already have seven fish caught, what I mean?
Yeah.
But it was just fun, And so you have these fishing derbies, 1996 fishing, and I just, but a lot of those T-shirts, I wore them, but then I was like, it's time to retire this T-shirt, and I just folded up and put it in the closet. And so I've got a bin full of old T-shirts. Awesome. I should go through them one year because it'd be cool to just kind of reminisce. You see those things and you reminisce about, I remember this shirt or that, whatever.
Yeah. And it's a guy thing too, isn't it? And there's some women listening rolling their eyes going, T-shirts, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
T-shirts are underrated. T-shirts are underrated, I'm telling you. T-shirts are awesome.
We had back in my early days in the NFL, everybody had Converse. Like, all the offensive linemen had Converse
really?
Contracts.
They
had the best O-lineman shoes. They had the best. Wow. Oh, yeah. Not a question. And, like, we didn't even have, like, the big shoe contracts that you have now.
Mm-hmm.
They just, all your shoe contract was, hey, we throw you some swag every now and again, and you get shoes, like, to play in, right? That was essentially your Converse contract, right? There was no money involved. There was no big-time attachment, but the shoes were really good. And in 1991, they gave us our shoes and stuff, and they gave us these kind of almost like baseball-type T-shirts, And one night, like one of our first games, pretty much all the offensive, there's four or five of us, all happened just unbeknownst, we didn't talk about it, all had this Converse T-shirt on. Saturday night before the first game. And then it became superstition. We talked to Clint Hurdle earlier in the week that every Saturday night, and nobody talked about it, but every Saturday night we won, we ended up wearing these T-shirts. And we started the season 11-0. And I wore that T-shirt every Saturday night except, get this, except for the night before the Super Bowl. That was the first time I didn't wear that T-shirt. And I did it on purpose. Like, I'm not falling victim to superstition.
Okay, that answers my question.
Yeah, I'm not going to fall victim to superstition. I'm not going to wear it tonight. And I didn't, and we went out and opened a can on the Buffalo Bills like everybody else did. And but anyhow, it was our Converse T-shirt. I still have that T-shirt.
Oh.
Yeah, I still have that T-shirt.
How many T-shirts do you think you have in that bin you're talking about? You're talking about dozens, hundreds?
Probably between 50 and 100 that I kept. Really? I mean, I threw some of them away, yeah, obviously, yeah. You know, that were just either I wore them to the point where they were ratty, yeah, or
too small.
They didn't resonate. It wasn't something I liked.
It didn't resonate anymore. Yeah. My family and I went to Haiti in 2014 or 13, I forget, and we visited an orphanage, and a woman that we know started this place. Anyway, we come back a couple years later. She said, "Is there any chance you could maybe round up some Rockies T-shirts and we can outfit our kids at the orphanage?" I said, "Well, remind me again, how many do you have?" She said, "We have 125 kids."
Right.
And so I went to the Rockies, said, "Do you have any old T-shirts that you want to get rid of?" "Yeah, we got these Carlos Gonzalez, these cargo shirts that we kind of forgot about. We got 150 of them. You want them?" "Yeah." So I sent them. We shipped them over to Haiti. And I'm trying to find this picture. I'll put it on social media if I can find it. But it's a picture of all the kids, all 123 kids
in cargo
T-shirts.
Yeah.
It is awesome.
They're probably, you know what they're wearing right now? They're all wearing 49ers World Championship T-shirts right now. Because that's what they do with those. You know, they print them up and then they send them to.
Right.
They send them out to they donate them. So anyhow.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. My point is that T-shirts are underrated. They do. Oh, I found the picture. I'll put it on social media later. I'll send it to urgent care.
Yeah.
And see, he can maybe take care of it. Put
good
it on.
Thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, I got a question for you. We talked about Chad Ochocinco earlier, and he's talking about getting the Hall of Fame, says he's not going to beg for it. And after that, a lot of social media reaction that says, hey, if this guy can be in the Hall of Fame, Rod Smith should be in the Hall of Fame. And you're a big Rod Smith fan. I know you are.
Absolutely.
With his numbers, does he deserve, in your mind, to be there?
Yeah.
Well, he's got almost 100 more catches than Chad Johnson.
Right. And not only that, I mean, a couple of world championships. He certainly deserves to be. And he did it. Like, he did it the right way. He was pivotal in Terrell Davis's, you know, career running the football. Pivotal. And when you start thinking about, well, it wasn't just Terrell Davis, you know, the people that are detractors will say, well, Landis Gary had 1,200 yards and Mike Anderson had 1,400 yards and Reuben Drones had over 1,000 yards, 1,200 yards. And, oh, Clinton Portis had, you know, 1,500 yards. And, oh, by the way, Tatum Bell had 1,000, you know, they'll just go through it. This litany of running back, you know, who was constant in that blocking for those guys, Rod Smith. And he, Eddie McCaffrey, those dudes, there was no diva bone in their bodies. Whatever it took for us to win, that's what they were willing to do.
Well, you said that yesterday.
Yeah.
You said, hey, Rod Smith, come back to Huddlegate. You see that block I put on that guy?
Oh, he's sitting waiting.
I took him out.
Waiting for us to get out of the film. Like, he'd be waiting for us to get out of the film. He's sitting in the locker room waiting for us to get out of watching film. And then he would like, did you see my block on so-and-so? Did you? So there was one play.
It tells you so much about a guy.
I'll never forget. He's playing. We're in a left formation, you know. So we're in some type of, left-handed formation. So the tight end's on the left-hand side, meaning Rod is the X receiver's over on the right-hand side. So, you know, we're in. Whatever we're in, whether we're in double wing left, or we're in, you know, just, you know, strong, like, strong left or weak, you know, whatever our formation is. So we've got the tight end, the Z receiver on the left hand side. We got, let's call it fullback. Let's call it strong left, right? Fullback on the left hand side, tailback behind him, and we run 19 handoff. And so Rod is split wide to the right hand side, and we break this run. And I'll never forget it because Grady Jackson was the nose guard of the Raiders. And Grady Jackson is you know, gets cut off, probably gets cut. He falls down. Then he gets up, and he has to chase the play, right? And Mike Anderson breaks a couple tackles, and he gets down the sideline. So he's flying down the sideline. Grady Jackson, all 330 pounds, is flying down, chasing him. And just before he, before Mike Anderson goes out of bounds, about 40 yards down the football field, here comes Rod from his X receiver spot looping around, and Grady's starting to slow down. The play's not over, and Rod blindside block, just lays him out, right? Just ass over tea kettle, right? Feet in the air type of thing. And we come out of our meeting, you know, we watch the film, we come out, and Rod's in the locker room going, did you see it? Did you see it? Did you see me lay Grady out? You know, he probably had 2 touchdowns and 100 yards receiving. He didn't care. He was like, did you see me lay out the nose guard, right? I mean, that's all he cared about. And, I remember that like it was yesterday. So those are the things that to me set guys apart. And there are so many good receivers, you know, that right now, if you look at it, and I don't have a list in front of me of all the receivers that are out there that have the potential to go into the Hall of Fame. You know, I bet you if you gave me a list, there's at least 6 or 7 of them. I would say, yeah, that guy goes in before Chad does. Mm-hmm. And Rod is one of those guys in my mind.
Yep. All right. We'll continue that Rod Smith discussion when we come back. Jerry Schimmel and Mark Sclareth on this Wednesday morning. 2 more days to go this week, and I'll be in for Mike Evans, sitting in for Mike tomorrow, and then on Friday, I think on Monday maybe as well. I'll have to check that schedule again. Hey, we're talking about Rod Smith, and let me tell you this. First of all, Stink, Rod Smith from Missouri Southern, Division II school now, back, I think when he was playing his NAI school, but that was in the conference that we were in, we being Washburn University, my alma mater, where I played baseball. And then after that, while I was in law school, I was their voice. I was their radio voice. This was before Rod Smith got there. But I got to tell you this, in I think my second year, I did the games for 3 years. The Washburn Ichabods, by the way. How great is that nickname?
The Ichabods.
Ichabods, yeah.
Right.
That's a good one. I think it was my second year. We played Mississippi Valley State at home with Jerry Rice.
Right.
Yeah. I got to do a college game where Jerry Rice played our
team. Did he tear you guys up?
We being Washburn, the Ichabods, were up 15-14 after the first quarter. Got beat 77-15. True story. You can go back and look it up if you want to.
Well, you guys won the first quarter.
Won the first quarter, first, yeah.
You celebrated afterwards. You know what? You probably benched your starters, brought in a bunch of backups. I remember that time because...
and by the way, Jerry Rice caught 15 catches and didn't play in the fourth quarter.
So during my time at Idaho... During that time, that was probably like 86, 85 or 86.
Yeah.
During that, when you were calling that game.
Yeah, it was a little before that, actually, but yeah.
Was it?
Yeah.
84, maybe?
84, 85, yeah.
Yeah.
In there. Yeah, you're right. In that time, yes.
Yeah. Well, because when Jerry Rice was at Mississippi Valley State, we had a guy, so they played, it was Division II. Mississippi Valley State was, or Division I AA, or Division...
Yeah,
1AA. And so, at the time, I was at Idaho, and we had a guy that was neck and neck with Jerry as far as catches are concerned by the name of Eric Yarber.
Oh.
So they were, every week, we would check, because you had this Jerry Rice guy at Mississippi Valley State, and we had Eric Yarber. Now, Yarbs, I love... Eric Yarber is one of the great guys. He ended up playing like 5 years in the league. He got drafted by the Skins, went to Washington for 3 or 4 years, was a punt returner for them. Then he went, when Dan Henning left Washington to go be the offensive coordinator, I think, at the Chargers, he took Yarbs with him. Now, Yarbs is the receiver coach, the wide receiver coach for the Rams.
Oh, okay.
So Yarbs is a great guy that we in touch all the time. But we were going kind of neck and neck. How many catches does Yarbs have versus Jerry Rice have? And so I think that was 85 that we followed that, because I think it might have been the next year where Jerry Rice ended up getting drafted, 86 or 87. So
somewhere in there.
Anyhow, kind of cool connection there.
Yeah. That's cool. Hey, let's get back to Rod Smith for a moment and just a peek at his numbers. We talked about Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco, mm-hmm. for his career, 766 catches. He did have some touchdowns. He had 67 touchdowns. Rod Smith had way more receptions. Rod played a few more years, but he had 849 receptions, and he had 68 touchdowns. So he had about the same number of touchdowns,
right.
many more yards, and a few more seasons for Rod Smith. But as I mentioned, Chad Johnson never had a 1,000-yard season. Rod Smith had...
No, Chad had 1,000-yard season.
I'm sorry.
He never had
100 catches. My bad. Yeah, right. 100 catches. Rod had two. 2000, he had 100, and in 2001, he had 113.
Yeah.
So two more of those than Chad Johnson had, yeah. Yeah, so you compare those two, and Chad, well, what we'll never see is Rod Smith campaigning. I've never met the guy, but you know him really well. Campaigning to get in the Hall of Fame. That's not his deal, is it? His deal is, you know what, if you think I'm good enough, I'll go. If not, I'm not going to worry about it. Would that sum it up?
Right. He doesn't. I mean, he would never. It's never what drove him.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he said the other day on we're doing this Legends Week, and he was on Stokely and Zach, and basically said, you know, players today are worried about getting a million likes on Instagram. I was worried about getting 57 likes from the locker room.
Love that.
Like,
quote.
That's all I worried about. That's all I was concerned about. But that's the kind of team we had. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the kind of guys that we had, that played, you know, it truly was about, you know, the name on the front of the jersey type of thing. And, you know, interesting, like, you know, I'll give you a little, my Rod sat right across from me, like a little catty corner across from me in the locker room for years. I remember 6 years in Denver, right? And so my locker was like there was an opening into the training room. My locker was the second one in, and then Rod, there was a little 6-foot path there, and Rod was in the locker kind of across from me. And I'm getting ready for practice. I had my knee scoped on on a Monday, and I am literally putting my practice stuff on to go out and practice on Friday. And I'm pulling up a knee sleeve. I still have the little Steri-Strips over the scope holes in my knee, and like blood is trickling down my shin. And Rod walks in, and he's not dressed to practice, right? And he's like, what are you doing? I go, what do you mean, what am I going to do? I'm going to practice. And he's like, and, you know, expletive. He goes, are you kidding me? You know? I go, no. And he's like, all right. So then he gets dressed. And he's like, dude, I cannot miss a Friday practice because my hamstring's a little sore when I'm watching you pull up a knee sleeve and blood is trickling down your leg, right?
You inspired him.
But that's the kind of team we had. The guy never missed a workout.
Yeah.
You know, he never one time missed a workout in the off season because he was shooting a commercial or something. Mm. Never. Mm. Like, he just didn't. He is just one of those ultimate teammates. Just a great human being, man. I love Rod Smith.
You know, what a big guy either, was he? I mean, a guy who took so much pride in blocking, 6 foot, about 200, 205 or so.
Right. Probably couldn't beat anybody in a 40.
Yeah.
You know,
it's just why he wasn't drafted.
Yeah. It's exactly, you know, it's just the type of people that we had. You know, interestingly enough, I'll give you another Rod Smith story. So in 1995, I think it was Rod's, I think in 94, Rod was on the practice squad because he was a quarterback.
Yeah.
And then he came over, he was on the practice squad.
Yeah.
And so in 1995, he literally, that was his first year he dressed for games, but he didn't really play. And we had, you know, we had Anthony Miller, who was a Pro Bowl player and could really run like the wind. And I remember Rod's first catch was against my former team, the Washington Redskins, here in Denver on last play of the game. Scores on like a 40-yard touchdown bomb over Darryl Green for the touchdown. And I'll never forget, we get done with the season in 95, and we're having our kind of offensive line out meeting. And, you know, like, hey, guys, you know, we're come back next year, blah, 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 blah. And Alex Gibbs talked about Rod Smith, and we didn't really know Rod. Like, I didn't really know Rod. I didn't know him as a player. You know what I mean? He never played, right? And they talked about they're going to let Anthony Miller go. And maybe it was when we came back. I think it might have been mini camp, like come back for mini camps and come back. Like, and Anthony Miller had been let go, one of the fastest guys in the league, Pro Bowl receiver. And Alex Smith talking about Rod Smith and goes, this guy, or Alex Gibbs, excuse me, talking about Rod Smith going, this guy is going to be a star.
Wow.
Like, he's like, this guy cuts up our defense on look squad. This guy is on, and he did, and I'll never forget, he goes, we could put him in our backfield. And he could rush for 1,400 yards.
Wow.
It was just like, he is just a football player.
Interesting.
You guys watch. This guy is going to be phenomenal. And this is, you know, going into the 96 season, and Rod Smith had maybe, going into that season, he may have had a couple of catches.
Yeah, six his first year.
Six
catches in 95. Yeah.
It's six catches on his career. And we were talking about, we could put him in the backfield, get 1,400 yards. We could put, like, that's what they were talking about. And we had no, like, who? Rod Smith?
And what a player, what a career.
Amazing.
Hey, good stuff. Let's do this again tomorrow, shall we?
Hey, why not?
Okay.
Why not?
All right. We got Tony Orlando and Dawn coming up next.
Nice. I tell you what, one of the best shows in Denver, Colorado, coming up right now. Next, it's Sandy and the Big O. Ladies on that cigar, Big O.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.